in this first day. It's again being streamed, as you can see here for the announcement in the front room, streaming and recording. So I put here that the classes will all be streamed and recorded, and they are accessible at this link here that you see, the forlistening.hrg.no, and how they are named, class one, and or perhaps course one, and then first, second, sixth, and so on. And you can contact with me. I have the email address there. It's necessary also by Skype. I am going to add later the student assistant, Konstantin. He will come here at 4 o'clock and will be introduced to the class. And then the other thing is about the continuation course, IMT4651. It comes in the second half of the term. And as I said this morning, for registering to this new course, which comes after this one, you have to pass this one course. But I will make sure that the grading of this course, Security Management Dynamics, is finished quickly after you take the second project, so that very quickly you can know if you pass to the course. Okay, so now going back to the front page, going back to the content today, the topic that we have now is modeling security with system archetype. It's a lecture, and then we will start with exercises. Konstantin will be here and supervise as well. But also during the lecture, there will be opportunity for doing something hands-on, you and me, with Vensim. By the way, as to Vensim, make sure that you have installed the help system as well, all the files. Have you checked that? If not, check it, because there is a lot of information in Vensim, as well as quite many projects from which you can learn a lot. Later, I come back to that. So now, as to the lecture, and by the way, I have, after this morning, I have revised several slides and improved them and uploaded again. So this lecture on causal loops has been changed significantly, but I have also changed, well, not significant, but I've changed. And also the lectures this afternoon have been revised. So if you uploaded them earlier, you could upload them again to be sure that you have the last version. So what we are doing now is concentrate on very simple causal loop diagrams that you will find in all kind of domains, not only in security. They are simplified in the sense that they simplify problems to the essential, the intended consequence, the unintended consequence, and how to mitigate the unintended consequence, which mostly is something you don't want. Okay, so the content of this lecture is first an introduction as to what are system archetypes, then how they are classified. And then we look at the archetype at its most general. We call it the generic system archetype. I will then talk about the importance of boundaries and systems. Then going back to the classification of archetypes, I will go in details into the four types of archetypes, and they are called underachievement archetype, out of control archetype, relative achievement archetype, and relative control archetype. And then I come back to the issue of boundaries and how they mask or hide, make difficult to recognize the unintended effects. And finally, we build an example of a system archetype using VenSim, and then, of course, related to security. Okay, so the nice thing about system archetypes is that they need little work. And therefore, if you are dealing with some clients, suppose you are working in applied security and want to sell some ideas, then you can tell the client first, it won't cost you very much to get a prototype. And that's very often a good strategy, because then the client knows I spent little, but I can see how good this is. Then can I decide whether I'm interested in continuing? So you can gain clients by getting them hooked with a very simple model that is quick to develop. And then typically the client likes that, and then you can proceed to sell a major project. They are qualitative. They are actually systems, they are actually causal loops, but then in a particular structure of only three feedback loops. And they can be used for conceptualizing problems, for discussing or eliciting new knowledge, for communication of insights. But then system archetypes are wrong, but all models are wrong. But some models are more wrong than others. Why do I say that system archetypes are wrong? Well, simply because models are always a simplification of reality. For instance, if I told you, make a model of this room, you wouldn't be very surprised. You would be very surprised because you would ask me, what for? What do you want the model for? And that's the point. Because the purpose of the model dictates what you put in the model. So if I told you, okay, I am concerned about safety. I need a model of the room, so if there is some fire here, that the people know how to behave. Okay? In that case, the important thing is how you evacuate, how you alert that there is a fire, how can you perhaps help finding the systems to squash the fire, and so on. So that's the information that is important. Other things are not important for that respect. And then you will not put that in the model. However, if the model was, suppose in this room needed some refurbishing, new paintings, new seats and whatever, then the information would be that you put in the model is very, very different. So therefore, models are always for a purpose. In the sense of comparing with the reality, they are wrong because they don't represent the totality of the object. But the point is that they should be useful for the purpose. Now, as to the system archetypes. System archetypes, they are causal loops. And they are of particular interest because they refer to patterns of behavior over time of systems that you find everywhere. And the point is that systems often behave in a way that you wouldn't expect. They are counterintuitive. That's not what your intuition tells you in advance. And that's why we are interested in understanding that, because the behavior of systems, say some security system, that is different from what you would expect, that's a big challenge. And typically, most of the systems we are dealing with, they don't behave as we expect. Our intuition is not good enough. What you find in this archetype, in these generic structures, because you find them everywhere, they are actions. So what people do to solve some problem, then the intended reaction, the intended consequence, and the unintended reaction. In addition, because that happens very often, they include time delays in reaction times, that things don't happen immediately, but they take time to happen. Because these archetypes are found in all kinds of problems and systems, the nice thing about them is that once you have understood them, used them, and got acquainted with them, then you can translate the insights from one area to another one. These archetypes have kind of the same form. That is what isomorphic means. Iso means in Old Greek equal, and morphic means form. So isomorphic means equal form, same form. And because these archetypes have the same form in different application domains, they are very powerful. So for dealing with complex systems that change over time. There is a famous book that came out in 1990 by Professor Singer from the MIT. He called it the fifth discipline, and it's sold by the millions. And he used very many archetypes when describing problems, and they have very colorful names like limits to growth, shifting the burden, eroding goals, the escalation race or the arms race, success to the successful, fixes that fail, the tragedy of the commons, growth and underinvestment, and so on. So they are all very nice names and very suggestive names. You kind of get immediately an idea as to what they are dealing with. However, he make it difficult because he didn't recognize that actually several of these archetypes have the same structure. And the advance came from Stephen Wostenholm. He is a consultant in Great Britain. He had also a post as part-time professor somewhere. And he wrote an article that very quickly became recognized as a very important contribution, showing that actually there are only four archetypes, or you can express all the different archetypes that Senge were using in four different forms. And he called them underachievement, out of control, relative achievement, and relative control. And in these slides, you see already the clue. Because if you pay attention, then you see that the classification goes according to whether the intended outcome is reinforcing or balancing, and the unintended result is balancing or reinforcing. And since you have two options for the feedback loop in the intended outcome, and two options for the unintended feedback loop, either reinforcing or balancing, 2 times 2 is 4. To say it again, since we have causal loops, the archetypes are causal loops, and they consist of only 2 loops, and each loop can be either reinforcing or balancing, you get 4 possibilities. And I will come back to this classification and show you the archetypes later, and then you will see that the names underachievement, out of control, relative achievement, and relative control are very well suited for that. Then Wostenholm showed in his article, which by the way is in the frontal room, so you can, actually there are 2 articles by Wostenholm there about system archetypes. Then he showed that for each of these types of problem archetypes, these 4 ones, there is a solution. Solution in the sense that it will mitigate or reduce the problems caused by the unintended result. Again, as in this morning, whenever you have questions, just contact me. So now, as to the generic system archetype, on the left-hand side, you see the problem archetype. So let's concentrate on the left-hand side. So you see two feedback loops. There. In the top, a feedback loop caused by the action. That's what you would do to solve some problem. You act in some way to influence some outcome. The outcome is what you want to achieve. And as I said this morning, when you are driving from Lillehammer to Jøvik, so you are applying actions all the time so as to modify the outcome. The action is what you do when you wheel with the gas pedal and so on, with your brakes and so on. And the outcome is what the car is doing. And you want the outcome to be that the car in the end arrives in Jøvik. So you have to think of this as a wheel going on all the time. You are doing some actions to change some outcome. And depending on the outcome, you do some actions all the time. You are looking and watching what is happening. So if for some reason you make too much of a turn of the wheel in that direction, then you correct it and so on. So all the time you are comparing your outcome with what you want to do so as to intervene and so on. So on the top is the intended consequence feedback loop. But what happens in complex systems is that always, always, always there are unintended consequences. And I am going to show you a cartoon to this effect, which to make you happy and smile. I think I have it only in Norwegian, so I will have to translate it or later make it in English. I see it here in German. That is strange. Type. Let me see. Maybe I have it in picture here. Oh yeah, here it is. Welke. Okay, so in the top, you see, choose your line, choose your curve. For those who have little time, are in a hurry, and for those who are not in a hurry. And you see the unintended consequence for those who are in a hurry is that they come in the line where you have to wait at most. So whenever we are dealing with people and systems, very often our decisions lead to unintended consequences. So unintended consequences, they are always, always, always. And that's why it is so extremely important to keep them under consideration, because if you forget that, then you achieve the opposite of what you want. Like, as I told you this morning, the solution in quotation marks for reducing pollution by traffic by prohibiting that cars of a certain color would drive Monday, that cars of a different color on Tuesdays, and so these measures led to the opposite of what the authorities wanted. Instead of reducing traffic, they led to much more traffic and pollution. But then let's think a little bit about that. They did reduce traffic to begin with. Is there some problem? I will explain it in a moment, yes. So the unintended consequence often comes later. So you think first you have solved the problem, and then it takes time before the unintended effects show up. So in the case of the traffic control in Mexico, the traffic and the pollution went first down because it takes time until people adapt, buy a second car, and then you start getting more and more traffic and more pollution through all few scars. Okay, so because unintended consequences happen all the time, then you get a system reaction. Something happens in the system and that opposes the outcome. That is the unintended consequence loop. And now your question, what is the system boundary? This is a very good question, a very important point. Why do most people ignore the unintended consequences? Well, this is because often they come later. So you are not prepared. We use, so to speak, to things happening immediately. If you go and want to switch the light on, you press the switch and then the light comes on. If you want to switch it off, you press it and the light goes off. And most of the things that we deal with during our life and that we are familiar with are like that. You see, the cause and the effect come very shortly. The effect comes very shortly after the cause. But we have created a world, a complex world, where more and more consequences, especially the unintended consequences, do not show up immediately. In addition, often the consequences happen elsewhere. Think, for instance, of the sour precipitation that started being noticeable in Scandinavia about 100 years ago. Suddenly, in the rivers and the lakes, the salmon and the trout were disappearing, were dying. It turned out that the origin was because the lakes and the rivers were becoming sour because the rain and the snow was sour. But the reason for that was the pollution occurring in England, in Netherlands, in Germany, Czechoslovakia, and so on. So they were burning coal and other things that increased the amount of sour gases that mixed with the rain as sulfur oxide, for instance, and it was making the lakes sour. So the consequences of the Industrial Revolution and pollution occurring in England, in Germany, in the Netherlands, even in the Czech Republic, and so on, they show up many, many years later, and they show up in a different place from where they originated. So these are typical examples of barriers or boundaries. That is, the unintended consequence, the system reaction, is hidden. It's difficult to see. And that's another problem, because a very important problem, because that requires that we think very carefully to try to understand the systems so that we are able to anticipate or at least to detect where things are happening that are hidden from us. And that's what we have to focus upon in order to address the unintended consequence. We have to think of the action not only in terms of affecting the desired outcome, but also to affect the system reaction. And that introduces, as you can see, a second feedback loop, which goes from action to system reaction to outcome and to the action, which we call the solution feedback loop. But in order to achieve this, we have to think through the boundary, in a sense. So, more about the boundaries. There are many kinds of boundaries because organizations have a lot of boundaries. Boundaries can come for the people working in it, having different education, different culture. So, if you are trained differently, then you have some of a boundary or a barrier in between to communicate. But also because in organizations, people have different functions. They are divided in different departments. and typically these departments don't communicate so well. You communicate better within your department than others. Also questions of accounting, power relations, culture, but also questions of things occurring much later, because that is in a sense also a boundary between the thinking what you want to change and what actually happens later. Here you see several examples of boundaries that occur very often, and they go from physical boundaries to mental boundaries. And we have to accept that this is the way it is. When you are dealing with a complex system, as you have in organizations or even in society, there are a lot of such boundaries and barriers. But the point of what we call system thinking, thinking in terms of systems, is to make these boundaries transparent so that you can see through them. They are there, but they should be possible to see something through them so that we understand the other aspects, the other parts of the problem. Did I answer, Henrik, did I answer your question now? Okay. Then back to the classification of archetypes. We have an underachievement archetype when the intended achievement fails to be realized. The achievement is always something reinforcing, some growth, some becoming stronger, better, whatever. So that is reinforcing the action so that you get more and more out of it. That's the intended outcome, reinforcing. But the unintended result is that you get a balancing loop opposing your intended outcome. The out-of-control archetype happens when you have applied some balancing feedback loop, that is the intended outcome, but this intended control, intended balance, fails to be realized because you get, as unintended effect, a reinforcing feedback loop opposing the control. Then you have the relative achievement archetype, where the intended achievement, which is some reinforcing outcome, is gained at the expense of another outcome, which is also reinforcing, and it is compromising or working against yours. So intended outcome reinforcing, unintended result also a reinforcing loop. Then you have the relative control, where the intended control is only gained at the expense of others. So you get as intended outcome a balancing loop, as unintended results another balancing loop that is counteracting or suffering from the intended control. So this is just the overview, and now we look closely at the archetypes and making also specific by looking at examples of such archetypes in practice. So you not only learn the concepts of the archetypes, but you see also some examples how they occur in reality. So let's start with underachievement. In underachievement, you have at the top, this is the problem archetype, later we look at the solution archetype, at the top you have the intended consequence loop. You want to apply some actions to increase some outcome that should then lead to more possibilities of action to do more outcome. And that's because you want to grow, you want to get more things, you want to magnify, to reinforce what you are doing. And what happens often is that with some time delay, and that can be a considerable time delay, the system reaction is increased. This system reaction opposes the outcome. So you get kind of a break in the system. Very often, because you have some constraints that are creating a break in the system. And this happens with time delays, and often this is hidden because there are some boundaries in between that make it difficult for a decision maker to see that. Thinking in terms of the solution, you have to try to apply an action that not only influences the outcome, but also minimizes the system reaction, very often by unblocking the resource constraint. Now, this is at the moment very general, but in the next slide we start seeing examples. The structure of this slide is like this. This repeats the previous slide. That is the completely general or generic underachievement archetype. Here, it is a little bit less generic. We call it semi-generic because we, instead of action, which is completely general, and outcome, which is completely general, and system reaction also, we start using some terms that you can understand. And then we become even more specific, and then finally we look at a solution. So again, completely generic here in terms of action, outcome, system, reaction. For semi-generic, we have two examples, and now you see the names that Peter Singer used: limit to success, tragedy of the commons. Let's concentrate first on the top, limit to success. In limit to success, you are applying some effort to get some performance, and you want to increase your performance, so you do more effort and so on in a reinforcing way. But then there is some constraint that limits the action, that produces some limiting action with some time delay so that your performance decreases. For example, suppose you want to excel in this course. One way of excelling is to doing a lot of effort. If instead of working 2 hours per week with exercises, you work 4 hours per week, then you will increase your performance. Okay, suppose you work not 4 but 8 hours per week, you increase your performance. Suppose you want to work 16 hours per week and so on. Well, sooner or later, you hit the sky, the limits, because you get tired, you get too little sleep, and so on. So there is a resource constraint. You cannot concentrate anymore and whatever. And sooner or later, this will limit your performance. And this will not come immediately. Perhaps you can do that for weeks and weeks and weeks, but sooner or later, you hit the wall. This is an example. To make more specific, and this happens very often in practice, suppose you found a company and you are very successful. We are now in a specific one, in the third column here. So you are generating orders that gives you more sales. You market more, you get more orders, more sales, and so on and so on. So all is really exploding. Well, believe it or not, very many companies have them problems because they haven't anticipated the growth. So they are selling, accepting orders for things that they cannot deliver in time because the production or manufacturing capacity is limiting that. So as a consequence, because of limited manufacturing capacity, as they are selling more and more, the production lead time, the time it takes to realize the order, is becoming longer and longer and longer and longer. And then you start seeing that the people cancel the orders. And then your company gets a bad reputation. And instead of growing, maybe you experience that your company runs into difficulties. There are many examples of this. And this archetype is called growth and underinvestment. But again, in all these cases, limit to success, growth and underinvestment, and the tragedy of the commons that we are going to see in a moment, they are just special versions of the underachievement archetype. A very famous example of growth and underinvestment was the American Airlines company that actually discovered what is making now Ryanair and other solutions, other airlines, very successful. This airline was called People Express. And it started in the 1980s in the United States, at a time when flying was very, very expensive, and a lot of the aircraft was flying with few passengers. So they make the money not so much by filling the airplanes, but by taking very high prices. And they were doing it very well. Then people express had the idea, let's make it as cheap as possible so that more people can fly. So they wanted to fill the airplanes. In addition, they wanted to reduce the costs. So they introduced the idea of not flying to the major airports that were very expensive. They had to pay a lot for that. And in addition, they introduced the idea of the people recovering the baggage. They fly point to point. So instead, you wanted to fly, say, to Los Angeles from New York. Maybe there wasn't a direct flight. You flew to Denver, then you had to get your luggage, check it in again, and fly to Los Angeles. By this way, they eliminated the expense of dealing with baggage. So they let the passengers carry that. It was a tremendous success, more than the People Express company had anticipated. So what happened was that they got a tremendous demand for flying, and they were not prepared for that. They didn't have enough aircraft, they didn't have enough pilots. And then they decided to order more aircraft, more pilots, also more service agents. They didn't have enough people to answer to the orders and help if there were complaints and so on. In the meantime, and then they invested, but too late. They started ordering aircraft and hiring new pilots and new people and so on. But that takes time. In the meantime, they got a bad reputation, and the other companies started reacting by, they understood the idea was to reduce the price of flying. So when People Express finally got the airplanes, the demand had dropped to a minimum. So they went bankrupt. The consequences of this growth and underinvestment was that they ignored the unintended consequence of success, namely that they will have delays and limits to deal with the many passengers. They will get bad reputation, and they will invest too late in new aircraft and new personnel, so that when they had to pay for them, they didn't have the customers anymore, because they had disappeared, they were disappointed, and they had a bad reputation. And then Ryanair and others saw the opportunity. They understood that was a very good idea, but we have upfront to invest, because that's going to be a success, in enough aircraft, enough pilots, and so on. Okay, so we saw two examples of the underachievement archetype. Then we have the tragedy of the commons. In the tragedy of the commons, you have some activity that gives some reward. For instance, a very typical one is fishing. The more you fish, the more you earn, and so on and so on. The problem is that you are diminishing the population of fishes, and in the end, what can happen is that your reward decreases and decreases. And this has happened before, and it is happening. In former times, around Spain, Great Britain, and so on, there was a colossal, enormous quantity of fish. Or if you think of the fish banks in Newfoundland, they were full of cod. So they were as rich as Lofoten is with skrei and so on. They were also the wandering cod and so on. But in a few years, the Canadians exploited that, and the cod, the wandering cod, and similar skrei from Newfoundland has completely disappeared. So they destroyed that. And that's why it's called the tragedy of the commons, because this applies to areas that are common, where many people can go and exploit it. So Then to the right you see the possible solutions. In the case of the growth and underinvestment, manufacturing capacity, addressing that and increasing that in time, and thinking for or doing that as soon as possible, actually from the beginning. And that's what happened also with the should have been the solution for People Express. Immediately with the sales, think not of the manufacturing capacity, but of the delivering capacity, of the capacity to fly the people, invest in that. And that's what Ryanair has done. They have initiated... Hello? Yeah, the intended outcome by promoting sales with the flights, but they have also carefully immediately started investing in more aircraft so that they always have enough capacity and enough personnel. Okay. So that was the first archetype. Now, out of control archetype. In the out of control archetype, left hand the problem archetype, right hand included the solution archetype. You have a control action, which is the intended one, the intended consequence loop. It is a balancing loop. And it is intended to reduce the problem in need of control. The unintended consequence of the control action is sometimes that you are increasing some system reaction, and that system reaction will increase the problem in need of control. And then the solution lies in making sure that the control action enables or strengthens the solution link between the problem and the system reaction. Now, the same structure in the next slide, going from the completely general to the less general, semi-generic, to the specific, to the solution. So this here is the same archetype as in the previous slide. Here, in the semi-generic, you see two examples that are more specific. One is known by the name fixes that fails. The other one is known by shift in the burden. Fix that fails, you apply some fix to solve a problem, to reduce the problem. The fix itself increases the problem. And then you have a reinforcing loop opposing that. Very specific. Suppose you want to reduce crime by increasing the number of police. Certainly this is going to more and more criminals being caught. But then you hit the wall because you get so many people that need to be handled by justice. If you haven't prepared that with judges and so on in the court, and you don't have place for prisons and so on, then this is going to lead to having to release the people immediately. They come back to the crime scene or they increase the crime. Yesterday, I saw a video of what is happening in Germany. In some cities, they are getting people that are criminal. You all have read about the story of what happened in New Year's Eve. And the police told them, we get them, and then they are out in the street faster than we are able to write the report of what we did. And that's because they don't have, the police is catching the criminals, but then the court is not able to do it within. There is no space for them for getting in prison and doing that quickly, and then they are back in the scene. So they get them 3, 4, 5 times and so on, all the times they are free and so on. So that's a typical example of fixes that fail. So in that case, people will have to think, if you want a solution, not only of recruiting police, but also making sure that you can handle the people that you get. The other example of shifting the burden, I will take after the break because it's now 4 o'clock and the recording will stop.